That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
There goes Jerry Lewis. Well, he's right over here. Well, which one is he really? It's not very clear. Cause he's here, there, everywhere. Up the street, down the stairs. Running, jumping, slipping, sliding, laughing, singing, then he's hiding. Was he, is he in a tizzy? Something's cooking, is he busy? Coming, going, yes and no. Kitchen sink is overflowing. Going round, revolving doors. In the loafers, not in the shorts. Getting wet, in a jet. Dancing to be castanets. Look around, pouring spots. There he goes, in private.
Everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, listening to, thank God, not more mascot characters. Thank God, I guess, not another Sigma Six. We have no Gina this week, but stay with us. Stay with us.
I watched
a Chan special today. Robert Clark Chan, before we introduce our special guest for this episode, that is my question. Why?
Look, mistakes were made. It's rare. It is so rare that you will hear me say, man, I wish we watched an episode of G.I. Joe instead. And yet here we are. That was something else.
This is, okay, here's the deal. Let me introduce our guest, and then we'll get to the meat of the show, because I know our guest has something definitely to say about it as well. We have comedian, actor, you know, Hollywood comedy guy. We have Sam Weller with us today. Sam, I've never actually met you before, but I am excited to have you on the show and get to know you a little further.
Ray, I just want to complete that sentiment to you. I feel like you and I are seeing each other like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Predator across the bar, and we're smacking hands, you son of a bitch.
You know what? I feel that.
What we had to witness in this very special episode of the podcast was no less than a Cobra-style plot to explode my fucking brain. Chan, why?
I will take your analogy one step further. You're Arnold, I'm Carl Weathers. We're having the high-five bro moment.
Yeah, okay, Chan, hold on. Let's clear up because...
Yeah, what?
The way Sam described it, he was like, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Predator are across the bar. And what happened to Carl Weathers? Why is he shaking hands with fucking Predator?
Maybe he knows something about Carl Weathers that I don't. But I would argue that the two of us are having that bro moment, but there in the jungle waits Chan the Predator, about to snipe us with a triple laser gun called the Jerry Lewis. Will the real Jerry Lewis please sit down?
I ran across a reference to this many moons ago, put it on the list. Which is a notepad file that I rarely access. Every once in a while, I'm like, oh, we need like a new, something to watch. And I'll look at that and go, oh, right, we never did this one or whatever. So I went and looked for it and found it on archive.org. And I'm like, all right, I don't know what this is. And I looked at the wiki and there was no, usually I'll look and there's like some synopses. And I'm like, oh, this episode looks terrible. You know, like it's a Jerry Lewis messing with computers or something like that in 1970. So like, But there were like there was nothing. So I was like, well, I just pick one at random and we'll see. And usually I look for something that is terrible, that actively is terrible. I had nothing to go on. And the shit that showed up in this was 10 times worse than if I had tried to find the worst episode imaginable. I couldn't have hit like this. This was an atrocity.
Yeah, I just wanted to open with something that I actually ended my notes with. Believe it or not, Ray and Rob, I took notes on this, but they get progressively angrier as as like I look down and I go, it's still 7 minutes. It's still 8 minutes and 5 seconds.
It was longest 23 minutes of my life.
And so the word that I would describe with this cartoon is hateful. Okay. Not in the content, actually. It's a hateful cartoon because it feels like it's being made by people held at gunpoint and they hate what they're doing and nobody's enjoying themselves. But then there's this almost wraparound moment where it is so bizarrely and perfunctorily done that it then becomes darkly comedic. Like you're locked in that little snow globe and Black Mirror where you just keep repeating some terrible day over and over again. It just beats you into submission. And I think maybe all these Native American jokes are really funny. You know, like that. It's a ridiculous piece. I can't believe our culture produced it.
Let us not forget that this is the man, Jerry Lewis, who created a Holocaust comedy so vile that he refused to release it in his lifetime. It still has not been released because, like, I guess he said, like, X number of years after I'm dead. And we still haven't got there yet, even though he's been dead quite some time. That's how bad the thing he did himself, a Jewish man, making a Holocaust comedy. And Life is Beautiful exists. So,
yeah,
it's worse than that.
As does Hogan's Heroes, just for the record.
Well, I mean, there I don't think Jerry Lewis had anything to do with that.
Thank God, because Hogan's Heroes is delightful.
But this thing,
nice Germans. Please let me go, Glazen.
What is it? The day the clown died, or what's is that the name of the
Something
movie?
Like that.
The day the clown cried. Yeah. The day the clown cried.
Okay.
I wanted really quick, Ray, because I know you're running the show. I just wanted to drop a little piece of Wikipedia history because I had to dive in slightly into this. Are you guys familiar at all with the production of this?
I am not. I've got information about the movie it was based on I want to talk about, but you go first. You go first.
Okay.
Break it down.
This is just on the animated show that we watched. So this was released, the whole show was like 18 episodes, and it was released between September 12, 1970 and September 2nd, 1972. So not a very long-running cartoon. But the thing that blew my effing mind, this isn't even Jerry Lewis.
No.
In the cartoon.
Of course not.
I mean, you're right. You know, of course not. Well, we know that because, you know, knowledge is power in this podcast. But for these folks, you would think that Jerry Lewis, you know, when you do a titular cartoon, you usually try and at least get a cameo. I mean, I guess when I was, you know, younger, Ace Ventura Pet Detective cartoon was definitely not Jim Carrey.
Oh, but my friend. We have done a number of these sort of like celebrity cartoons.
Yeah.
Almost never.
Brad Garrett voicing Hulk Hogan tells you everything you need to know.
It's based upon the show in which Jerry Lewis plays all these characters because that was Jerry Lewis's bit. So how do you feel as the actor voicing cartoon Jerry Lewis doing fake bits in this ridiculous cartoon? That's what's making this cartoon hateful, is that it separates you from your identity. It separates you from your purpose.
It's honestly, it makes me want to separate myself from living. It is horrendous.
So here for the people at home, I feel like I had a lot to explain here. First off, who is Jerry Lewis? I mean, maybe there's a lot of our audience. I'll be honest, I grew up just past when Jerry Lewis was like a thing. Like he had the telethon every single year. Yep. That was brutally unfunny and sad, and I never wanted to watch it. I tuned in for like one bit, and I've got this old ass man sucking on a lollipop pretending to be a kid, and that's the only segment I remember saying, I think it's a good lolly. I think my mom, she gave me a good lolly, and I'm like, what am I? No, this is upsetting. And so I turned it off, which allows us to Jerry Lewis. Was a very, very well respected back in like the 1960s and even 70s. He was essentially the Jim Carrey of that, Jim Carrey of the 90s of that era. I say that like Jim Carrey is still like a current reference anymore. He's not. But what Jim Carrey did with like Ace Ventura, The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, etc.
And the Sonic movie.
And of course, now with the Sonic. Kids at home, the Sonic movies, Dr. Eggman, Robotnik.
Now Jim that he's Carrey. A respected veteran,
he is respected, which is wild.
The statesman of the genre,
right? And so this is what Jerry Lewis did, almost the same bits. Essentially, it was the same energy, the same physicality.
Yeah, kooky, high-pitched voice. And playing different characters, because Jim Carrey in Living Color, when he was coming up through sketch comedy, he played all sorts of really distinct characters. Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin were a comedic duo together. I mean, that when you're talking about Jerry Lewis, like he's the bedrock of what we consider to be a comedy star from Hollywood.
That's right. So this spawns us into 1965, where he made a movie called The Family Jewels, which he wrote with a partner. He produced it and directed it and starred in it. So this is his deal. He plays seven characters in this movie. Seven of them. Let me just break them down really quick. I'm going to give you generic things because that's the basis of what this show's cartoon's about. So he plays a hobo clown. He plays an elderly sea captain. He plays a mobster. He plays a chauffeur. He plays a Shylock Payton, what I assume is the Chinese private eye. He plays a fashion photographer, and he plays what he refers to as a He-Man pilot, Eddie Payton. There you go. And essentially, these characters are all, with the exception of the chauffeur, are all relatives of each other. And the plot of the movie, such as it is the chauffeur taking this little girl around to all these family members to try to find the one that I guess will take her in. And so, and they're all terrible. Like that is the onus behind The Family Jewels. And somebody saw this comedy and they said, this would work great as an animated show where we animate all of these characters, wedge them in there like Wendy's does chili to their menu, and just make it happen, but also not with Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, very pointedly not with Jerry Lewis. And Ray, that was a wonderful recap, because I feel like it almost justifies the show if that's what the show was. But none of these people are related that this not Jerry Lewis plays in the Jerry Lewis show.
Well, they're all related to Jerry Lewis, who now is a central character playing his standard Jerry Lewis character, who is sort of a dim-witted Pee-wee Herman type of a character who has crazy things happening around him that he's reacting to, but also he's quirky. And then, to be fair, because his dad is like this mad scientist inventor, his cousin or something is his Chinese private eye.
Is that? Okay. Well, okay.
It was a little confusing. Yeah.
Right. The private eye in the movie is a British guy. So it's.
Oh, he is. Was, okay.
As near as I can tell, there was no Chinese characters in there, but.
But it's Filmation in the 70s. Yeah.
Oh, I was blindsided by that one. I tell you what.
When we get there in the recap, Chan, like I just want you to just talk about your feelings. I just want you to let it out because I was so floored. I couldn't believe it. It was wretched.
We've seen some racially insensitive material on this show before. This one, like, you know, what was that character from, what, 16 Candles?
It's Long just, Duck Dong.
It's just, Dong. It's just that.
Long-time knowing fans will recall the Scooby-Doo episode.
Yes, they will. That's all I can think
about. And
have
a visceral reaction. It is worse than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also because it's 1970. And, you know, I think previously we had mentioned things like Hogan's Heroes, right? Like,
yeah.
What is the media and the cartoons and the portrayals of different types of people and whatever. And it's like, you know, the usage of different identities as props is just prevalent. They treat it like a different Commedia dell'arte mask to put on, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, this is the caricature of this kind of person. This is the caricature of this. And it's like, that's the level that we're at, where it's just like assumed, like, well, that's just a pastiche you can do, you know?
Yeah. And I will say, I was looking into voice acting, like classes and like training online. And I found an old school, I won't say his name, but I found an old school, well-known but to me, voice actor who did his own classes online. And I was like, that's interesting. So I started going through all the stuff he offered for free on his website. And he was talking about all the different characters that you can create. And he talked about one of his favorite easy characters to do is a guy from India. And this is a white dude. And he was just like, let me show you how easy it is to just slip into your Indian accent. So therefore, you can just play Indian characters as a voice actor. And I'm like, this is like 2022 when I was looking at this. This hasn't rolled since like the 80s, my friend. Like, you might want to take this off your website. I'm just saying.
I mean, look, Hank Azaria has fallen on hard times.
And oh, no, it wasn't Hank Azaria. Stop it. Stop it, too. Stop it. Unless it was, but
knowing is half the drama.
Look, Hank is as hard a times as Hank Azaria might possibly fall.
Oh, God.
He's not doing, you can't hire him to do voice actor classes online. I guarantee that.
Not unless he like wanted to, right? Like that's not something he's doing because he has to. He's got Simpsons money. He never work again.
Yeah.
He could literally live his entire life as the Blue Raja from Mystery Men with the spoons and outfit, and no one would think twice about it. He's that rich. He could just be that character forever. That's a dream.
Is society ready for a Mystery Men gritty reboot? I mean, Ben Stiller, Jeanie Garofalo, they're all the right age.
Isn't that what Kick-Ass is?
Ooh.
Kick-Ass is fun, but I prefer never mind. I just totally farted. Super.
And when it's going to be amazing when you insert that 42 minutes later into this episode.
Super.
Oh, that's a movie about that's Joe Pesci as a landlord.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Actually, where's Joe Pesci's Marvel paycheck?
You know what? We got to get Giancarlo Esposito, which he says he's booked it. They haven't announced it yet, but he said he booked it.
I heard Kang. I'm your Kang. What, you laughing at me? What, I'm funny to you? I'm Kang.
Oh, see. I think it's high time for Joe Pesci as Dr. Doom in the Fantastic Four reboot.
That is so sick.
Let's go. I got magic. And I got a mask.
What's the big deal? I love my mother. I love my mother, huh? I'd go to hell for her. I'd go to hell for my mother. I'd do it too.
That's not how we talk in Latveria. look, I'm a fan.
The two Utes, Your Honor, your Latverian honor.
When he tries to take the baseball bat to the back of Thing's head, but the bat breaks. I'm telling you, this stuff writes itself. So anyway, so will the real Jerry Lewis please stand up or sit down, I should say. That's based on That's My Line or some game show of the era. Was it with the real Slim Shady?
With the real, stand up. On To Tell the Truth.
To Tell the Truth. Thank you so much. Yeah. Fantastic. So that sets the stage. Now, can we explain how Chan doesn't understand how links and advice for watching programs works? Because I know yeah. I watched multiple episodes of this show until I got the right one. And I believe you did as well, Sam.
I definitely did. I was sent a playlist, a cornucopia of content. I think, Ray, adding up to about 2 hours of life that I can't get back.
Did you watch all of them?
No, I didn't. I only ended up watching one other episode before this okay. one. But
see, because Chan sent us an archive.org link, which
and the URL has the name on it.
But it's also got a thing you can press right there on the message on the phone with the little play button. So I hit the play button, assuming that it would sync up to the episode. Obviously, yes. Why else would it not? So I watched it from the messages tab on my phone this afternoon. And then as soon as I finished, I said, what happened in this episode doesn't feel like anything that would be out to launch.
To be fair, the correct episode, the one that I watched, the only one that I watched, because I watched on my computer like a normal human would. I don't watch on a fucking message tab on my phone.
A weirdo.
Took me to a thing that was called Out to Launch, and the cartoon had zero to do with. I thought there would be rockets or something, or maybe like a boat
or an alien.
It was about a medicine man.
It might be November 14th, 1970's famous episode Rainmaker, because that is. That occupies a huge portion of the totally good 2024 content we're going to cover.
Yeah. So just real quick, I watched a different episode with a wonderful Asian detective and his one-ton son as they work together with Jerry to solve a crime involving a car automotive plant. Where the blueprints were being stolen by literally the only other guy. There were like five characters in the episode, and they couldn't find the one guy who was still the only other character.
My kingdom for the criminal. We should have had a crossover with Hannah and Barbara and had the mystery gang show up and try and tie that episode up a little faster.
It would have been great. It turned out that the only other character who wasn't the owner of the factory or related to Jerry Lewis, the guy with the like trench coat who was skulking around, hiding in corners and stealing things, turned out to be the
private
criminal.
Eye.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, sorry. It was terrible. And then there was like cars and stuff. It was not very good. And then I watched it. I go, that wasn't Out to Launch. I don't think. Let me check. No, yeah. Out to Launch was about Jerry. Okay, here we go. Let me just set this up, and you guys tell me what you think. The premise of the show is that Jerry Lewis, as Jerry Lewis, but his yeah. Pee-wee Herman-esque character, is a down-on-his-luck guy looking for a job. So he works at a temp agency where the conceit is he gets sent out to a new job seemingly in every episode, where he also runs across all of his relatives and other characters that he bumps into. Because the mobster character was, in fact, in the car episode, but not the one we're about to talk about.
Yeah, I saw a bit of this guy, Chan. Chan, have you seen this guy, this gangster?
I have not. I have only watched the one thing that we were supposed to watch, and I refuse to watch anything
Chan,
else.
Chan, you son of a bitch.
You know what?
You son of a bitch, Chan.
When Gina comes back from Scotland, the two of yous do an episode, make her watch one of these, and then you'll feel like you've done something with your time.
If you think I'm subjecting Gina to this without you there to take the fall for it, you are out of your mind.
She would probably hurt you.
Yeah, Chan, you can't take advantage of my niceties for a second episode.
This is outrageous. So
I think I'm pretty offended, honestly.
Look, I'm
you
just
know
trying
what?
To
this,
I'm trying
this
to
is the most offensive thing that's happening on this episode.
Nothing else offensive on this.
Nope. No reason to get into the episode either. Good night, everybody.
Hey.
No.
Hello.
Jerry Lewis. Now you know what? I really thought Jerry Lewis was playing all of these characters on this show. I didn't look into it hard enough. The one other thing
I don't
to note,
think I don't think you would have been taken advantage of to think that, because the entire like sculpting of the show is like, hey kids, here he comes, Jerry Lewis. We're gonna have fun. By the way, there's a song that happens in between segments of this cartoon.
Oh yeah, can we hear that, please?
We're gonna have some fun. We're gonna do it now, and we're not gonna wait until we get to.
Are we gonna stitch it in?
I'm gonna play it, but like,
well, first off, do we have the intro theme song and/or the intro stitch?
We got a lot of stuff happening. So, but you know what? Let's go to the interstitial song. This is the thing that takes us into commercial break. Like every commercial break, and it's longer than you'd expect.
They wrote this in 5 minutes.
Don't go away, but be right back. Got a lot more fun for you.
Yes.
Share it there. You'll be right back with a lot of things to do. We're gonna have fun.
That's like every goddamn commercial break. What the hell?
I also like that on the archive page, there's just like a one shot that says, please put commercial here or something like that. And that made me laugh every time I saw it.
Maybe something happens, but we don't know. We wrote this song before they wrote a single episode of the show.
We're having fun with Jerry Lewis, but he's not here.
Make sure to say we're having fun and not that we're dying.
Oh my God. It is. Yeah. I should have known better. Honestly, Chan, with as many of these as we've done, I should have known better than to think that was actually Jerry Lewis. It's just a talented voice actor doing Jerry Lewis impressions, which quite honestly probably makes for a better show than if you just brought in dead in the eyes Jerry Lewis of 1970 to make this happen.
Yeah,
I do want to give credit to the voice. I think his name, I have the wiki open, Howard Morris. So
phenomenal.
I think he does actually, yeah, like a great performance. I mean, obviously the material is insane, but but his delivery, yeah, doesn't falter. I thought he did a good job doing a Jerry Lewis. Yeah.
I look forward to when Chan pulls the sound clips of this Asian detective. I'd like to hear more of what he has to say, but we'll get there when we get there.
Well, here's the thing. We're not going to blame David Lander for that, because it is Howard Morris who does the One Ton Sun in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Fluis.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the only other thing I noticed before we get into the meat of the episode, did you see who one of the animators or
Don Bluth as doing layout?
Don Bluth.
Yep.
Don Bluth is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Early stuff.
Have you guys addressed the beauteous gift that is the Secret of NIMH on this podcast?
Part of the confusion stemmed from the fact that you think we do any more work for the show than watch maybe 20 minutes of a cartoon and then talk about it. We do not do movies. We do not do hour-long specials. We cannot be bothered.
We do, but we break them up into two episodes. And we did do G.I. Joe, the movie,
Chan,
the animated
you're a
movie
podcast
over three.
Prima donna, and I'll bring you down before I die. I swear it.
I think The Secret of NIMH is to my memory, it's too good for this show.
There'll be stuff to talk about for sure, because like that's one of those things that fucking scar you if you watch it as a child.
I did. Yeah, I went to go see it in theaters.
Yep.
Or be formative in your development as a person.
Let me ask this question, Chan. We have children roughly the same age. Would you let your kid, who you allow to watch Amazing Digital Circus, would you allow that child to watch Secret of NIMH?
No, Chan, they haven't seen the Amazing Digital Circus.
It wasn't me. He knew about it from school.
No. Sam, it wasn't Chan the first time. The other 999 were all Chan.
Cried Chan. It was my dad who did it.
I will bust on Chan for this until the end of time.
No, he better not tell his therapist years down the road that I was the one that got him into that shit. That's on him. That is his own fault.
He got himself into it, and then Chan built a house around it.
You draw your guidelines. I go, I can only be so responsible for the happiness of my children. After a certain point, they are on their own.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. That's something I learned from my mom, and I'm taking it with me as I become a parent.
Yeah. And it worked out well for you, Chan, because you're a podcaster.
That's all I ask is that my kid does not grow up to do comedy. And I'll count myself successful as a parent.
Oh, boy. There's no shot. There's no shot that he's not getting into comedy. You have to literally move to like Iowa to avoid that happening, Chan. And I know that's not happening.
His parents are too creative. It's just going to happen.
So, that's all the excitement. Chan, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Lead us in.
First off, we just start and you get the exterior of a house that is emoting.
It's alive.
We cut.
Is that house ill? It's coughing. By the way, Ray, in the other episodes of the show that I like accidentally watched parts of.
Yes.
this house opening is sort of like their Simpsons couch gag.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, this is like a fucking cold open.
it's bizarre because There's an amount of anthropomorphizing here that doesn't happen anywhere else in the show.
No, it does not.
No.
And no, the house is alive. It is real. It apparently has eaten them, but it's also a house.
It's more than 50 years old. This thing's 1970. So it's 54 years ago. There's all sorts of cultural references that we're probably not getting. There was probably some some TV show like My Mother the House or whatever that they're making fun of, but because we don't know what it's making fun of, it's just this bizarre fucking surreal thing that's happening. This house who's like sneezing because someone's smoking in there.
We are literally stuck in the back rooms of pop culture right now. Like anything could be happening. I think will the real Jerry Lewis please sit down? If like you said that the house had consumed the family, if you told me that this program was like the dying dream of everybody as they were slowly consumed by like the Sarlacc pit like house, I believe you.
If you get trapped into a black hole, this is the last thing you see. Yeah. And it's funny Robert Clark Chan mentions My Mother the House, because in 1965, of course, there was a sitcom called My Mother the Car.
Yes.
Synopsis. Yeah. If you don't know about this, this stars Jerry Van Dyke, a.k.a. the guy from Coach. That's the one thing. No, but he was Dick Van Dyke's brother. He's very talented. It aired for one season. And it's one of the worst TV shows of all time in that a guy went car shopping. And then while shopping for cars, he finds like this old ass jalopy. Like, this is 1965. This car is from 1928. Oh, it's basically a Model T, and it has the soul of his dead mother in the car. So he buys the car to be with the spirit of his dead mother. This sitcom. This sitcom known as the second worst show of all time. Number one was the Jerry Springer Show. I disagree with that very much.
Yeah, Jerry Springer has some great moments.
Jerry knew wonderful. What he was doing.
Yes, he did.
I don't know that the makers of My Mother the Car had any conception of what they had brought into the world.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just think that the makers of My Mother, the Car, were obviously trying to kick off a brand new American fetish. They were like, look, everybody loves muscle cars and chrome bumpers. We all have a mommy fetish, right? So let's just make it corporal. You know, like guys really want to care about their cars and gussy them up. Anyway, I took this in a bad direction. Ray, save me.
This followed in a trend of shows of that era where you took a very normal family and put something fantastic in there, as is laid out by their Wikipedia page here. So this is from the era of The Talking Horse, Mr. Ed, and Alien, Among Us, My Favorite Martian, Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie, having magic in the suburbs, and of course, The Flying Nun. It tried to follow in those footsteps and absolutely bombed out horrifically. Horrifically. This show, we may have to do an episode of this for this show. It is god awful looking.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Strawberry shortcake, and it's too sweet. Their pretend kisses make kissing a treat.
Each sold separately.
Baby strawberry shortcake, give your mommy a kiss. I love you, baby orange blossom.
When you squeeze their tummies, they blow sweet-scented make-believe kisses.
Delicious baby angel cake. Time to get ready for your nap. Don't you just love them to pieces?
Baby strawberry shortcake and baby orange blossom and baby angel cake, each sold separately.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Anyway, this might be worse. It's called The Real Jerry Lewis. Please sit down and let me pop my notes here. This is an episode, this is episode 5, called Out to Launch, which I don't know if they got the title wrong.
We think.
I think Sam's right. It probably is actually the episode Rainmaker.
It's got to be, right?
Because that makes sense.
So Chan sent us an archive.org that had the wrong episode on the wrong link and thinks we had any chance at all of getting this right.
Look,
he was setting us up for failure, just like the animators and great creatives were set up for failure by being given this lung course of a concept. I don't know what a lung course is, but it's a lung course.
It is correct. It is correct. It is the universe was like, you know what? You need to be in the headspace. You need to... Here's something, here's a little flub at the beginning so that you'll be in a place to know that everything is wrong. Everything is wrong.
Everything is wrong. Look, the house, there's smoke coming out of the house, so the house starts like hacking and coughing, if I remember this right, because the house is real, but only in the bumper at the intro and the outro of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Again, we're in the death dream, folks. This is a death dream. Okay,
this is Jacob's ladder scenario, almost assuredly.
I think
the gas ended up going up too high inside the house, and we're all hallucinating. Somehow it got to us, the audience.
This was technically a government program to make people check their gas lines. This was a cartoon.
Effective.
Yes, yeah. I think so. I checked it. Yeah.
It was before they added the smell to methane. To know that there's a leak. They're like, we got to figure out how to make people check their gas. And Jerry Lewis is the guy to do it.
What if we make a racist Jerry Lewis cartoon to get people to recognize gas leaks? Honestly, that tracks better than any other explanation for this show.
What's the meme of Jane Lynch in Glee, I think, laying back in her chair, and the meme format is like, I'm going to make the, and then they insert like something terrible, like, I'm going to make the worst Jerry Lewis cartoon ever imagined. Like, that's what this felt like. Yeah.
The cold open is, the idea is that his dad is a inventor. And what he decided to invent was like swapping all of the appliances for, and maybe I missed where he explained why.
He did explain why. Let me real quick, Chan, because it's such a pain to move the furniture. What if we just replace furniture's function with other pieces of furniture?
How is, the TV is now an oven.
That's right.
The
couch is a stove.
Yeah.
The couch is a stove. And then,
like, right off the bat, we get Jerry Lewis, who is Jerry, a fake Jerry Lewis, which is awful in and of itself.
I need to hit.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that's the house.
How's supper coming, Geraldine?
Oh, just fine, Jerry. It won't be long now.
Wait a minute. What's the TV doing out here in the kitchen?
There's Jerry Lewis, and then there's the weird ass. But the little sister who talks like this for no reason.
This might be too deep of a pull for the audience, but are you familiar with the manga character Blackjack by Osamu Tezuka, the surgeon with the hands of God? He has an assistant, which is like a young girl that he's patched together Frankenstein style from like parts of other girls. It's odd. We're not going to get into it. But the moment that I saw this strange sister character and how differently Jerry Lewis is drawn from her, I was like, they are both experiments of this German dad. German. Okay, so follow me on this.
Yeah, I'm with you so far.
Okay, so here we go. So I think that this repulsive, like immediate, like, oh my god, this feels so unnatural. Nothing of what they're talking about is human, and their logic is skewed. Like, if the reveal at the end of the season was like their brains were made from multiple brains, like, I'd believe it.
I love this theory. I love this a lot. It actually, again, makes more sense than anything else we see on this episode. I love it. Yeah. So Jerry Lewis goes to the odd job employment agency. I really wanted the Bond villain to show up and cut his head off with a bowler hat, but that's not what ended up happening.
Yeah. If we had just cut the cartoon short.
His boss is Mr. Blunderpuss, which, quite honestly, phenomenal name.
Why?
Wasted Why? Here, but phenomenal name.
Since we're here, let's hear a little bit of the theme song.
Oh, which yes, is, please.
It is what it is.
There's old Jerry Lewis, but he's right over here. Well, which one is he really? Not very clear.
Okay, that's the idea. You get
childhood taunt.
The theme song is like taunting him.
Yeah,
there's like a laugh track on the theme song. Like, it's supposed to be so funny.
Well, they need to tell the audience, please clap.
Well,
please know that this is a comedy, but also the fact that the lyrics and like the cloying nature of that intro just makes it sound like they're saying like, fuck you, Jerry Lewis, you stupid fucker, fuck you. Like,
I mean, could you blame him? I'll start there.
No, that is correct.
And I will agree with Robert Clark Chan. This is the Jeb Bush of cartoon shows.
Oh, no, that was Sam.
Oh, excuse me, Sam. I do this all the time. It happens. Don't worry about Sam. It's not personal.
Yeah, no, usually he's confusing me with Gina, which is arguably harder, I would say.
Ray, don't worry.
When you get an idea in your head, you don't remember where it came from. You just remember the idea.
Uh-huh. And you know what? That is the Taoist way of looking at the world. We're all in a flow. It's not just the spokes that make the wheel, but the space in between the spokes.
Wow.
I don't know how we're going to improve on that. Good night, everybody. Nope. They're telling me I can't leave yet. Okay, fine. So there's a lot of gags early on that Jerry Lewis's favorite show is Ben Hazy. He's a doctor from TV. I believe that's based on Dr. Ben Casey, which was a TV show. I have to assume that's a reference.
Okay,
to that.
Okay, thank you. Because I stupidly Googled Ben Hazy. I was like, this has to be, and that makes so much more sense.
Ben Casey, five seasons, started in 1961, so this tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it tracks that the show had been off the air for 5 years before we reference it.
No, I mean, this, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. But when Family Jewels came out, it was still on the air, so we got that going for us at least.
Fair. They okay. All right.
Chan, they were all out of cigarettes the week they had to write these episodes. So, you know, you can be forgiven that they're in some kind of fugue state, you know?
Well, I mean, this is kind of typical, the cartoon writers who are writing for children are just putting in references that they know as like 48-year-old dudes.
Yes, they do.
So I really quick before we continue further, this episode reminded me of like if the Animaniacs had been draped in turpentine and and all the originality and fun was drained out of it.
You know, but to be fair, the Animaniacs itself was kind of a throwback to an older style of show. I mean, it was more like Rowan and Agreed. Martin laughing, right? More than anything else.
Or like your Merry Melodies kind of thing where like, yeah, we're taking cultural references and sending them up and whatnot. It's ordinary, but usually, I mean, I don't know. I want to say well that written. Usually it's better. I don't know.
Well written.
I mean, I'm sure that there's, if we actually had a line on more cartoons of this era, there's probably 1,000 that are just as bad as this that we've never heard of, because who the fuck would save them?
Yeah.
Just the Internet Archive, so we could not find the episode we're looking for. One thing that kills me is that they get a job in, they need to get filled, and they're looking for a doctor from a doctor running bird on Yucca Road in Yucca Flats. Why not?
And, which is the thing that you would call a temp agency for.
Yeah, I need a doctor. I'm calling a temp agency because they would obviously have doctors on call ready to go. But the thing that really bothers me is he says, Jerry Lewis, are you a doctor? First off, shame on you for even asking. That is, you know better, Mr. Blunderpuss, stop it. But then when Jerry Lewis is like, I've seen Ben Hazy before, the TV show with the doctor, he's like, awesome, you're clearly qualified to be a doctor based on that question alone that I didn't understand the answer for, and sends him on the way. And then when he finds out that Ben Hazy is a TV show, which seemed pretty clear from context that that's what Jerry was talking about, yeah. Mr. Blunderpuss turns to the camera and says, why does... Well, can you play the clip for me? Because the line read is honestly pretty wild.
Why does Lewis do this to me?
Now, okay, first off, amazing line read. Second off, F you, dude. You did that to yourself. You continue to employ Jerry Lewis. You didn't actually like look at his resume or follow up with any questions when you clearly admit to not understanding the answer he gave. Don't you blame poor innocent Jerry Lewis for your own incompetence running this temp agency. Also, you're the boss. Why are you the one handing out assignments now that I think about it?
Counterpoint, the only reference that Jerry Lewis listed on his resume was nice lady. And so the boss would be forgiven for saying, well, if a nice lady is going to vouch for Jerry, I don't even have to call her.
You know what? Valid. I didn't think I'd be on board for your counterpoint, but here I am.
Nice lady.
Jeez. Look, there are 3 friggin' voice actors on this show. This is so bare bones that it barely qualifies as bones. we're gonna do whatever we can with whatever we got. And if it's, if watching a medical show on TV qualifies you to be a doctor, fuck it. It's the 70s. Who gives?
Let's go.
Chan, Jerry Lewis is nothing but pliable. Faced with a household in which the TV becomes the oven and the couch becomes cookware, you know, you want somebody flexible like that for a temp agency. He needs to be able to get right in the midst of the action and start fucking things up incredibly hard.
He needs to be a jack of all trades, jack off of all trades. He's got to be, yeah.
Once again, I didn't think I was going to be on board, but I'm agreeing with absolutely everything that Sam is saying here. Fantastic. So he takes a stagecoach of all things, right? That's weird. He takes a stagecoach to the middle of nowhere, Yucca Flats, to a Native American reservation.
Yeah, this really quick to back up before we get to the Native American reservation.
Yes. Oh, please.
Is the multiple references to yucca, because this was written by Californians, right? Like, they did this animation on the West Coast. I feel like that is a joke. This is why I thought of Animaniacs. When I heard the yucca thing at the yucca thing at the yucca thing, I was like, it's like their version of Burbank, you know?
I like that.
Bird, yeah. 1313, Yucca Road, Yucca Flat, Yucca, Yucca. Hmm.
Yucca, Yucca.
I actually thought that was kind of funny. It's
delivered. You know what? Yucca, yeah, yucca. It's a little clever. There were, I'll be honest, there were more jokes I thought were clever in this than many other cartoons that we have watched. I'm not saying good. I'm saying at least clever.
This is one of those shows where I, grasping at straws in my notes, occasionally have one like, that was a properly constructed joke.
Yeah.
And that's as much praise as I will grant it.
You guys, I think we're coming around on this show. I think by the end of this, we're all going to be on board.
I don't believe so.
I think we are.
I am resisting the gravitational pull to the black hole that is this episode.
I'm really uncomfortable getting into the next part, but it's where Chan chose this episode. And
this was
Robert Clark Chan put us to talk about it. Robert Clark Chan gets your hatred, please.
At 5 minutes in, he mentions that the person who hired him is Dr. Running Bird. And in my notes, I'm like, oh God, this is going to be an indigenous person. I had no idea what this episode was about. Thought it was going to be rockets. And it's like Dr. Running Bird. I'm like, oh fuck.
You're like praying the entire time that he's in the carriage, like, please show up in Cape Canaveral. Please show up in Cape Canaveral.
Can we get Dr. Running Bird? What exactly is this voice? What exactly is this accent for Dr. Running Bird? Because I know what the stereotypical 1970 Native American accent sounds like, because Jerry Lewis will be doing it several times in this episode. But what is Dr. Running Bird's actual accent? Can we play some, please, for the people at home?
You're Dr. Running Bird?
In the feather.
Golly, I was expecting to meet a different type of doctor, a man of medicine.
I am a different type of doctor. I'm a medicine man. Why, I've never missed a rerun of Ben Hazy.
Like a Gomer Pyle, I guess.
Yeah, he's doing I think there's a character from Bambi. Is it not Thumper? Maybe Thumper.
Flower? I only know two, and then the Bambi. One that dies. So
it's definitely not Flower, because Flower is a beautiful innocent angel.
I think it's Thumper, the bunny.
I'm not saying but like anything about Flower.
This is it's like a Gomer Pyle. Not what I was expecting. The Native American doctor/medicine man.
So Ray, at this exact moment, when we realize that we're going in this other direction, I guess, with this Native American gag. I was like, maybe it's a commentary, because Jerry Lewis does say, it's a hippie commune. He describes it at first as if we're going to see like Flower Kids or something.
But then
it is, unfortunately, teepees. And all that jazz and wigwams and the whole thing. And then when he goes in and starts talking, I'm like, this show is not smart enough to make a joke about somebody appropriating Native American culture.
No, it's way too early for that.
No. Yeah, I wish.
But yes, at this point, I thought like, we're not going to have the, whatever Native American
Peter Pan.
We're just gonna like swerve right and just do like some wacky character. And this character, this medicine man, is that.
Yeah, and I'm but here's
it doesn't
the deal.
Take long.
It's fine. This is better. This is better than what I thought we were getting.
Yes.
It doesn't last.
Nope.
But I do also want to say, for Dr. Running Bird's sake, he says, I'm not hiring you to be my assistant. I'm hiring you to be my replacement. Dr. Running Bird, that is not what a temp agency is for.
Yes.
Very angry at this. That's the part I'm going to get mad at, Chan. So just let me have this.
To be fair, this isn't actually technically a temp agency. It's an odd job employment agency, which I'm going to say actually existed back then. I don't know. Maybe that was a thing. People just hired before TaskRabbit?
I was a part of TaskRabbit of its era. Yeah.
Okay. I actually worked at a temp agency for a while.
Too.
Yeah.
Okay. This is why we have you guys on the show.
Okay. So why are you denying our past?
Thank you.
Because this is fucking 50 years ago, and I don't think they had an Apple One back then.
Well, they had an Apple One for us, Rob, and thank God, because it got us to find love out here in this cursed city we call Los Angeles.
I mean, it's been pretty nice to me, this city. I don't know. Oh, gosh, sorry.
Shut up with your perfect life.
Yeah, your fucking house-owning ass in Mission Hills.
I keep failing upwards, Chan, no matter how hard I try. This town keeps saying, you're a white guy of a certain age.
The Jerry Lewis of 2024, right here.
No, you know what they call that, Chan? Soft skills. That's what they call it.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. So
The art of the deal, Chan.
We meet. This is off the rails. Thank God. No matter how hard we try, though, we do have to get it back on track, no matter how much we don't want to. Chief Mean Ugly Bird is the angry chief of the village.
What?
And it turns out he's a real Foghorn Leghorn ripoff character.
He's a fucking bird.
He's a real bird.
That doesn't make any sense.
As wild as this gets, audience, I guarantee you're not ready for the payoff at the end. I wasn't. I had to write it down. We'll get there. We'll get there. He's a real bird. No explanation given in this moment. He's Chief Mean Ugly Bird. It's literally they're just doing a Foghorn Leghorn. Could we hear what he sounds like?
You're Chief Mean Ugly Bird?
Who else? So you're the new medicine man, eh?
Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I am losing my sanity. I feel it literally escaping from my body, like sweat on a cold day.
Oh, yeah. I'm also hallucinating. Chan, do we have a lot of other clips of this guy for further on? I'm guessing.
Probably.
Okay. Yeah. I just want eagle-eyed listeners to know that the Foghorn Leghorn of it all comes in so hot. By the end of his performance, you can almost feel him going, "What am I doing with my life? Why am I here? I want to be a voice actor. Why am I doing a bad Foghorn Leghorn?" You could hear the darkness. You know, it comes through because he just keeps saying,
"Ooh, wow. Now your job is going to be to produce a tremendous deluge of precipitation of the size which will replenish the underground reservoirs."
Okay.
I mean, what if you gave us Foghorn Leghorn at 85%? What if you gave us that? Would that be good?
There's also a random Snagglepuss in here, so like they don't give a shit about stealing.
They lost his first take in a phosphorus fire somewhere, right? Like they only had the take where he was just marking it, you know.
It went up in a drug fueled rage like Richard Pryor's hair. So his job as the medicine man, we'll keep going. Why not? Is to make it rain, and not in that classic strip club with Pac-Man Jones way. It is to literally create water from the sky. I got it. I'm glad Sam's with me because I knew Chan wouldn't be. He does. You know what? Honestly, what I thought was funny, I thought it was clever. I liked it when they did this bit in Day of the Tentacle, the famed LucasArts game. If you need it to rain, what do? You wash your car, and he does it. Then that does not work, so he hangs clothing out to dry. None of it is working. But at the end of these hijinks,
here's where my note was like, that's actually a good joke.
It's a good joke.
I like it.
Clever.
In the midst of all this shit, a well-constructed gag.
I'm fine with it. So he finds one rain cloud up in the sky, and I don't know where this came from, which cartoon physics, but you have to shoot a cannon through the rain cloud to then make it rain.
Well,
makes sense in cartoons.
Salting clouds with something. I don't know what it is, but some sort of chemical thing. You put it in there and will help it rain. I think is what that is based on.
Sarah McLaughlin actually sung about this in her song "Cannon Through a Rain Cloud."
Makes sense.
She breaks down the physics step by step in a beautifully lilting female soprano.
You know what? She's done so much for us.
I'm happy to hear this show got something good. From inspiration. That's great.
Like they jumped in a time machine. They saw all the wonders of art and creation. And they came back and they still made this fucking cartoon.
You know, if I get a time machine, I'm going to go back and stop this from happening.
Yeah, you really should. I don't think anyone
can't think of anything else. Yeah, if I had to choose one wrong in history to write, this is it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, there's another fun bit where the cloud keeps eating the cannonballs and then shoots them all back at the ground again. And I said, yeah, that's what would happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's a slapstick gag and there's nothing wrong with it.
It's fine. Like, again, these are better bits than what we have gotten in other shows that are better than this previously.
Fair listeners, that the hosts, even in their highest praise for the show, can only muster nominal agreement. yes, that was a joke. Agreed, indeed.
I'll be honest, sometimes shows don't know what jokes are, and we've covered them.
The cadence of a joke.
Yeah.
That's my purred happily. It's great that every commercial break is... Here's that fucking 30-second song to really pad things out because we can't even be fucking bothered.
They know how to do it. They know how to do it. Chan, I'm going to just set this next bit up, and I want your impression of it. Because this is where Jerry Lewis ends up in the desert trying to run from Chief Mean Ugly Bird, and he's trying to hide behind cactuses, but the cactuses keep moving. And then finally he hears talking from inside the cactuses because in disguise, for reasons I'm sure, at this Native American reservation are Detective Huntun and his son, One-Ton's son, the giant Andre the Giant looking baby man thing.
Baby man thing was a WWF wrestler.
He was. 1985 was a heck of a time pre-Hogan.
I can hear Howard Finkel right now going, baby man thing.
Oh my God. The Fink, RIP. Chan, what do you have to tell us about this obvious Asian character?
Here's the thing. My grandfather, never met him, died before I was born. As I'm going through some of his old stuff, I found numerous Chinese caricatures on merch. You know, your like big bucktooth, slant-eyed characters on like mugs and coasters and, you know, various things. Because, I mean, yeah, in the 50s and 60s and whatnot like that, he experienced such vile racism. Like, he literally went to college to get a degree in chemistry. No one would hire him because he was Chinese, so he went and got a pilot's license. No one would hire him because he was Chinese, so he eventually got a fucking medical degree because he could open his own practice and like no one could tell him no. So he moved out to bumfuck Egypt and opened a traumatic surgery office, which is like,
wow.
Before there were emergency rooms, you know, you got your arm cut off by a wheat thresher, you go to him and he would fix. And because your arm's just been cut off in a fucking wheat thresher, what are you not gonna go to the guy just because he's Chinese? So he was steeped in it, and judging by what I found after, you know, many decades later, was it like one of the ways he dealt with it was to like just kind of embrace the that's a Chinese person, all right. Hey, let's let's go. Hero, you know, want sucky fucky. So like, I have in some ways internalized that, and I'm prepared when this sort of thing happens. I am ready for it. I, you know, we eventually watched Charlie Chan and the Chan Clan.
Yes, we did.
I was ready for it. And this, here's another iteration of Charlie Chan, because obviously, you know, there's this Chinese detective and his, there are multiple sons, but like number one son was, you know, the one that was with him a lot. And one ton son, why not? You know what? Someone on the writing staff would go to Chinese restaurants, knew what one ton was, knew what a funny joke it was, that one ton also is both a dumpling and a weight measurement. So let's make a huge fat son and let's go. Let's fucking go. And
they
basically
went.
I just was not expecting fucking cactuses to pop out with Chinese caricatures in the middle of a whole thing with indigenous people that was also crazy racist. And it's a lot.
So
it's a lot.
Because I watched the previous episode. This is the second of two that I watched, Robert Clark Chan. I was prepared for this character to show up in this episode because he shows up to solve a mystery in a heist in the previous episode. So it makes sense. I'm still unclear what he's even doing here in the first place, but his son, One Ton Son, doesn't have does not have a stereotypical Asian accent. But could we hear a little bit of the detective himself?
Same. Have had a situation under surveillance for some time. You're sure in a mess, Bubbler. However, must continue on previous case.
Previous case.
Woo! Fun times.
I think what makes this sequence doubly mentally damaging. And before we move forward, Chan, your grandpa sounds fucking awesome.
Oh yeah. No, they the family had high hopes for me because like, well, if this guy did it, like surely kid's gonna. Oh, we're gonna give him the name Bright Ambition, the Chinese name Bright Ambition, and hopefully that all pan out. And here I am.
Well,
if your grandfather had been around when podcasts were a thing, he probably would have had one.
If he were around when podcasts were a thing and saw that this is what his offspring, his progeny, ended up doing, he would have.
Been proud murdered. That you're a loving friend, a devoted father, and a loving husband.
Yeah, that's how Asian fathers do it. That is definitely the stereotype.
Chan, I've got good news to break right here. I was at a car dealership, and I found this old jalopy.
Did it sound like your mother?
It sounded like your deceased grandfather.
Wow. I got to get me that.
And he has something he wants to say to you. I thought about doing it the bit even harder. I will not be taking this bit any further because I will get myself in trouble.
Fair enough. Coward.
That's my callback. Enjoy. I hope you enjoyed it.
I think just to put a button on this part is like the pervasiveness of racist stereotypes is that they like just keep showing up. Right. Like you're in a cartoon in which like the storyline would not even have reason to like go in this direction other than like, oh, these are just other ensemble characters we have in the show. But it's like you're confronted with it. You're just like constantly confronted with it, because when you don't push back, you have a society that accepts it as normalized. And then it's just very easy to keep doing jokes like this. And like I was saying earlier, it's a mask you put on. That's how they diminish it and materialize it. They make it something that is just for them to use as an object, as a point of humor, and then drop it and then still be insulated by their privilege and their race. So
yeah, it's not good humor. It's not like intended to say anything or even to, you know, shine a light on the human condition or get laughter from the ways in which we are all similar. It's like, here's a stack of jokes that are just there. And let's plug them in because we cannot be bothered on any level. And it shows throughout this cartoon. It's not just limited to the racist stuff. Everything just says we phone this in.
Yeah. Can we go back to firing cannonballs at rain clouds or something? Like, where's that happening?
Well, there's also a lady in a third cactus, unbefore seen to now. And I believe she refers to herself as Princess Phony. Did I hear that correctly?
I believe so.
Okay. So I think that's based on another established character from the show. There's a Sister Geraldine, Professor Lewis. There's other characters, Mr. Blunderpuss. Okay, never mind. I can't justify it. Fuck this.
Well, you need a Pocahontas-style Native American princess to join the cast in this moment.
Oh, yes, and she must be chaste and honorable, of course.
Yeah, well, she says...
No, 'tis I, Princess Phony, and I'm very sad.
Sure.
She's very sad. She's very sad. She
Princess Phony.
She says, I have to give the chief a kiss, and that will break the spell. Because a spell was cast on him by somebody, I'm sure,
what?
To turn him into bird.
What do you mean a spell? Where was the spell happening?
This is the backstory of how we got there.
Oh wait, did you actually miss that, or were you joking?
No, I legit missed. Like, what's the spell? Is he going there because because there's a spell on the chief or something?
No,
she explains that the reason why this fucking bird is there for no fucking reason is because the love of her life, the chief, a spell was cast on him. And
I just realized something. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, but is this a pidgin English joke that they're pushing in there with this bird? Is that what they're going for?
I don't think so, because pigeon is not what that is.
He is not a pigeon. I'm just wondering. Like,
I think it's just the hack joke of he looks like the thing that his name is.
Great bit. Yeah, there's a then there's a part I just brain tuned out. I tuned back in again, and everyone has been captured by Chief Mean Ugly Bird, and they are all tied to poles. And what made me laugh, yes, in fact, laugh, is that he got the stagecoach horses also tied to poles. Yeah. I thought that was absurd and funny.
What was happening was that they were trying to put him to sleep so that she could kiss him, just like Sleeping Beauty, break the spell. So he plays this song and is, you know, like the worst lullaby. Do we really have to do this?
I mean, it's a song, Chan. I want to hear it now that you've reminded me of what I tuned out.
Play the song. Play the song.
Now to put the chief to sleep. Rock-a-bye, chiefy, on the treetop when the wind blows.
He does that, okay, and one by one, all of the characters fall asleep.
What was that sound? It sounded like a prolapse occurring.
what I like about that bit is, as he's singing the song, meant to be humorous, even the laugh track was like, not coming along for this one.
Ray, on the point of the laugh track, did you hear the moments where there would just be an isolated, like, from like a guy? Like, there'd be, no, I'm serious. Like, please, dear God, do not go back and watch this. Don't even watch this. Please don't watch this. But but if you test yourself, when you watch it, like, there's a moment, I think, in the first few minutes where, like, there's laughter, canned laughter, this variation, that variation. And then after, like, one, like, miscellaneous comment, there's just, like, one guy in the laugh track go like, ugh.
That's it. I like it. Honestly, that laugh track, he gets us. He's just
Is that a Jesus?
It is.
Okay.
I just found out about who makes those commercials, and I'm very upset, so I had to put a reference in there.
A more dyed-in-the-wool atheist, I immediately went out after that Super Bowl commercial. I was like, all right, who's the asshole that made this thing? Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I figured.
I mean, took a lot of valuable lessons from the Church of Latter-day Saints in the 90s.
They had a lot of great commercials, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, they were well filmed, and they always had just like a pleasant reminder of like, be nice to old people. I don't know. It seemed innocent enough.
Can I tell you, I remember being younger, and I was raised very Catholic. And I remember those commercials came out, and they were very approachable. And I remember I said to my mom, I'm just like, hey, what's up with these Church of Latter-day Saints people? They seem like a lot better than what we're doing.
Cooler.
As Catholics. And she says to me, she goes, sure, but they also don't believe in birthday parties. I said, fuck this, I'm out. I'm out.
Your mom is the real winner of this podcast.
She in many ways, she is the real winner of this podcast. So, okay, another bit I actually thought was funny. He sees the coming in the distance, a dust cloud, and Jerry Lewis says, it's the cavalry. So the chief unties him, saying, oh, no, cavalry's coming. I got to untie you and make it. He goes, oh, wait, that's not the cavalry at all. So he reties him back up again. Now, I understand this is a joke at the expense of many murdered and scalped Native Americans. But as a bit, as it was kind of funny. I untie a thing, I retie a thing when the threat is over. I'm done defending this bit now because it is actually horrific.
I'm also just going to play a quick little clip of the detective placing a telephone call
in the teepee.
Most humble servant would like to play even more humble correct call, please.
Most humble correct call, please.
Oh, God. Woo. Oh, Lordy, Lou. Sam,
they really double up with the, like, you know, they really double up with the music in the backdrop of that whole line delivery.
And this
no trope is spared.
This is where it gets wild. So, well, almost. First off, the what was coming in the distance is the dad and the sister of Jerry Lewis in their car to pull on up. Why they're here, what they add, nothing.
They're here because they're answering an ad for someone who knows someone who can fix stuff. Yes. They're also looking for a rain person.
Why not? Why not?
And yeah, Geraldine.
Why not? Pure exhaustion just drips from Ray's mouth. Why not?
He does create a scientific system that links all the cactuses together with hoses and creates
that irrigation
body of water. Congratulations. He has ancient Greece technology. Great job.
You know what? Nothing wrong with that. They need water. Fine. So like he hooks up a bunch of pipes to the cactuses to provide water. Now they got a big lake. Sure. Sure, man.
Great. You know what? We're helping people. I like that. But this is the part of the episode now that I was not ready for.
Yeah.
People at home, when I teased earlier, this is the ending you are not going to believe. Here's Holy what shit. Happens. Y'all just let me roll for a sec. Because it's time for the princess to give a kiss to the bird to break the spell. Standard premise. How can we go weird from here? Well, the detective says, this is where I need to step in. He stops the kiss from happening, I believe, or right after. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
The hot indigenous princess is about to kiss the bird. To break the spell.
He stops it from happening to reveal, take off her mask and reveal that she is actually the stagecoach driver from earlier in the episode who is there to get money?
To steal the chief's money somehow. I guess if he dressed as the chief's wife and broke the spell, then they would be married and he would have her money. He would have his money.
It's not the chief's wife, to my knowledge, because he says, we're not done with the reveals.
Yep.
He takes the head off of one of the horses.
Yep.
To reveal that it's I think this is his wife who looks totally different. Mm-hmm. Her name is Running Horse.
Yep. And she looks like a horse.
And she's a person pretending to be a horse. The second horse is still a real horse, though. How did she keep up? I don't know.
Unclear.
But stop! I hate it!
We're not done!
Keep going. The bird takes off his mask. Turns out he wasn't cursed at all.
He wasn't cursed at all. He's the
chief.
No, he's the doctor. Nope.
He's the chief.
Doctor.
He's the chief.
Oh, he's Dr. Running Bird.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, you're right. Yeah.
He is Dr. Running Bird, but we're not done yet.
No.
Because you Dr. Running Bird
need
takes off
to stop
his mask. He has a double masking. And it turns out Dr. Running Bird, a.k.a. Chief Angry Mean Ugly Bird, is actually, you'll never believe this, Dr. Ben Hazy. He's the TV doctor from earlier in this episode.
Y'all.
What happened?
This almost brought me around. The final sketch I did on a house sketch team at the Pack Theater years ago before the pandemic.
Chandler.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to do it. They're going to let me do it because it's the very last thing. And I did a sketch which involved numerous levels of someone waking up out of a nightmare into a new nightmare on stage. And I was like, how could we fucking keep going? I built a fake baby because our kid was like 6 months old at the time. And I pretended like I had brought the baby on stage, and then I dropped the baby off the balcony and then woke up into another nightmare. And I was like, you know, I'm going to go as fucking far as I can. We're going to go like 8-9 levels into this nightmare. And I don't think the audience cared, especially for it. They weren't pissed, but it was super self-indulgent. And I was so happy that I got to do that for myself. And the fact that out of fucking nowhere, they start pulling off masks and we get down to the goddamn TV doctor that has been a running gag this entire thing.
Insane.
I was like, holy fuck, this is kind of awesome.
It's kind of awesome. And they justify this madness by saying, I came out west to pretend to be the doctor / chief of this Native American tribe to get away from my autograph-seeking fans who will not leave me alone, and thus proving it. Every other character on the show pulls out a pen and paper and tries to chase him around the reservation looking for an autograph. He ends up, I believe, stealing the car. Is this right? And he drives away as they chase after him. Like it was a Beatles or Monkees television show. And then they cut back to the house because we got to return to the house at the end.
Back to the house.
And it's revealed that Dr. Ben Hazy has made friends with the Lewises and he is carving their turkey using his medical knowledge. I would point out he is an actor playing a doctor, but doesn't matter. He's a real doctor too. And the joke is so good. The house, pull back. The house, the roof comes unhinged and the house starts laughing and they drop credits here. What happened to this goddamn show?
This is, I have it on good authority, the inspiration for David Lynch's Eraserhead. He saw this and was like, I need to recreate that experience and I'm going to blow people's motherfucking minds. Let's do a thing with a crazy little baby and scissors and foam. And
This last 2 minutes of episode is a high that the Mission Impossible series of movies has been chasing unsuccessfully for like 7 movies.
Masks on masks on masks on masks. And at the end, the creamy nougat underneath all the insensitive jokes and the nonsensical punchlines and the aggravated, just agonizingly drawn out jokes and gags and voices, they whip out an ending that would be not uncommon to be seen on an Adult Swim show.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, in 1970.
If this was the end to a Venture Brothers episode, we'd all be like, brilliant.
Oh, this is awesome.
Best thing we've ever seen.
They called back to this, they called back to that, but then they kept going with it, and it's like this moment of like the people throwing up their hands and just going, I don't care anymore. I don't care. Just animate anything. This show is made for children. I don't love children. I don't respect children. I hate families. I hate Jerry Lewis. I definitely hate multiple different ethnic groups. And I can't wait to unleash my quote unquote comedy on the world. No, these were people in an era doing a job. And their job was probably not paying them well. And so they just went in and said, what is the hackiest crap that we could do? But then at the very end, it was like 2 a.m. in the writer's room. Again, no cigarettes, right? Everybody's kind of hallucinating at this point. This is what I said before. The whole writer's room for the Jerry Lewis show has just been nicotine strung out. Finally, somebody said, what if the horse pulled its mask off?
To reveal a character we have never seen up to this point in the episode.
Also, just a teensy bit of misogyny just to throw it in there because just for flavor.
That's the spice.
I picture the writer's room for this at that moment when they say, guys, in 50 years, there's going to be COVID. Let's not take it to 11. Let's take it to 136. Unbelievable. And that is the end of this Jerry Lewis episode. Most definitely not episode 5 out to launch. Assuredly, it is not that. Do I want to go find what that one is now? No, kinda.
Not even a little bit.
But I won't.
Ray, I really appreciate. See, you and Chan do a wonderful podcast that tries to. I'm touting you guys right now. I'm blowing a little smoke, but it's genuine. The fact that we've been through this odyssey of mediocrity, and yet you still want to try and find some kind of compressed diamond in the rough. Don't go in the lion's mouth, Ray. Please, just don't.
I guess it'll just depend on whether I have my next gas leak or not. That will determine whether, if you get that message being like, guys, I'm checking out another one. I want you to call SoCal Edison immediately and get a technician to my new house.
Knowing as half the podcast was sponsored by SoCal Gas. SoCal Gas, make sure to check your fucking gas line.
If you smell rotten eggs, you may have a gas leak or have just watched an episode of Will the Real Jerry Lewis Please Sit Down?
The symptoms are the same.
Assume anything.
If you smell what Jerry Lewis is cooking.
If Jerry Lewis and Andy Kaufman had a wrestling match,
oh boy,
that would be roughly what we're experiencing right now. I feel like
I think that would genuinely be really funny, though.
It would be a thing that happened.
It would be okay until Jerry the King Lawler inserted himself, you know, and then it becomes a lot less fun.
Yeah. That's what his 19-year-old wife said.
Oh God, stop it. Anyway, that is mercifully this is a 23-minute, but if you take out the intro, the outro, the credits, and all of the interstitials, probably about 14 minutes of actual content, and we have stretched it out to nearly an hour and a half, and there is, after the credits, there will be more material. I guarantee it.
More than it deserves. More than it deserves.
Oh, well, more than it deserves. But before...
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No,
sorry,
no, Ray, you go ahead. You have
no,
been.
No, I just, all I wanted to say too is, like, you know, in the midst of all the terribleness, these are still people that were trying to make a cartoon, right? Like, at the end of the day, they studied at school. They hopefully are in between jobs. Maybe this was just paying the rent for a month or whatever. We just have to always keep in mind that context. All that being said, what a wretched piece of work.
Yeah, I like part of the show is sort of like exploring how far we've come, you know, like finding these cultural nuggets, yeah, and sort of exploring what it meant to the people at the time. And we have talked with so many creators and whatnot and gotten a sense of like what it's like to be under the gun and under budget and just trying to do something that you can be proud of with like zero resources and all that. So there's a tremendous amount of respect and compassion we have for the people that like make this sort of thing. And then sometimes you just get walloped on the side of the head. Like someone took a goddamn morning star and it's the 16th century. You're on the field of battle and you just see stars, man. You just clocked.
And let's not forget, I just discovered something that's blowing my mind. I'm going to share this. Don Bluth was getting work here. This helped create the Don Bluthiverse. Don Bluth is still alive, has not been doing a whole heck of a lot. He's pushing 90. He's like 87 right now. He is pushing 90 years old and has an upcoming project as co-director of Dragon's Lair, the movie, starring Ryan Reynolds.
That's awesome.
I am more hyped for this upcoming movie than I think I could have dreamed of being.
Oh, that
hyped
sounds
for.
Like a match made in heaven for Ryan Reynolds to be Dirk Daring. That's great.
I love it. I hope to God they get Benedict Cumberbatch to revoice his Smog voice as Singe the Dragon.
Oh, no, I wanted Benedict Cumberbatch to play the princess.
Okay, I will. Well, after seeing what happened in Zoolander 2, I don't think we're letting Benedict Cumberbatch play those roles anymore.
Fair shakes, fair shakes.
Very sad. It is animated. It is an animated movie I just discovered. I was kind of hoping it'd be live action, but it is, in fact, an animated movie.
Well, I still hope we get pictures of Benedict Cumberbatch in screen cap, mocap gear, just like moving around like a dragon. Even if he doesn't voice the dragon, still want those pictures.
Okay. It's in production. The only cast member listed is Ryan Reynolds, who is also a producer on the movie. So yeah, I'm in.
This is such an unbelievably positive note to end on, Ray. Thank you so much.
I had to bring it back around. Sam, please, you're the guest here. Please, because Chan won't tell projects he's done, and he will cut off my mic and the show before I get a chance to plug my projects. That's how it goes down. But Sam, for you, I guarantee he will not. Where can people find you online? What shows, etc., would you like to tell them about?
Absolutely. Well, I first want to thank Chan and Ray for having me. This was a super fun time. What an odyssey of an episode. Really had an enjoyable time. You guys are hilarious. But if you want to view more of my hilarity, you can find me online on Instagram at Sam Weller, YEAH. SamWeller. Yeah, Sam Weller. I do a lot of different stuff. I make some sketches with my friends from time to time. But also I'm an animator. I'm an illustrator. I have a comic collection that I'm working on. And I have two specific things to plug. The first is my wife and I recently launched a small business called Scrappy Ads, and you can go to scrappyads.io to check out our work. If you have a brand or a product or something that you are trying to promote, your business or anything like that, we offer very valuable, you know, nay, inexpensive takes on some digital video content for you. So go to scrappyads.io for that. And also, I want to plug Gina, who is involved in a project that that I did a couple years ago called Space Crime Pizza. Space Crime Pizza was a short 4-minute animation that I made, sort of a pseudo pilot, introducing you to a cast of four anthropomorphic female criminals as they steal a pizza restaurant rocket and go off on an adventure to try and right the wrongs that they feel that they've been dealt in life. Gina plays the character Harriet Goober, who is a bird lady that works for the evil pizza conglomerate. And they have a lengthy discussion with the head of the ship, played by Jazz Sams. We also have Carrie Lind and Neha Tareha and Aaron Bounds in it as well. Great talent. So just go to YouTube and search for Space Crime Pizza and hear a different side of Gina.
I do need to know how much you paid for her life rights, because I was unaware that that was a biographical cartoon you've done that is weirdly close to what she experienced in her own life.
This goes into exactly what I was just saying about how plugs at the end of this episode works. This was just over 2 years ago. This is the first I am hearing about it. It looks phenomenal. I want to watch it. It is only under 5 minutes long, starring TV's Gina Ippolito. And she never once told at least me or mentioned it on the show. I am glad it is getting the due that it deserves, because no one ever plugs anything but me on this show, and I'm made to feel bad about it.
He did a wonder. All the performers did a wonderful job, but I was really lucky to get Gina. I was always a fan of hers and her work, and she even directed me on a sketch team for a little bit as well. Yeah, it all makes sense. You know, she's a gift to a lot of different people, and she was a gift to me. So I just wanted to tout her, and she did a very funny performance in this role. So I hope all your fans check it out.
I cannot wait to see it. We will put a link to this, I'm sure, at some point. If we remember, I will try to remember. Somebody hit me up on Threads and remind me I need to post the thing. Please.
We'll send links, I guess. That's amazing. I don't know you. Amazing. I'll send you links, Ray. Come on. You know me.
Well, I'm looking at it right now on the Facebook page. It came up, which I could watch the YouTube video from the Facebook page because you did it correctly. I have liked it. There it is. All right, everybody. So I do a thank you all for joining the show. I do a vampire show. Chan, that's where you pulled it. That's where you pulled the plug, Chan.
Oh my gosh! No, I actually thought Chan was like jamming the signal. I was like, holy crap! This is legit. Like Rob really hates this guy.
Here's the thing. Ray expected me to pull it, and Chan, I am hanging him out to dry. We are continuing. This show is not over.
Isn't it though?
God damn it, we're gonna have a winner.
You are such a GD contrarian. Bless you.
I'm so sorry. Was this a swearing podcast or not?
Oh, it is. Know. It is.
There goes Jerry Lewis. But he's right over here. Well, which one is he really? It's not very clear, 'cause he's here, there, everywhere, up the street, down the stairs, running, jumping, slipping, sliding, laughing, singing, then he's hiding. Was he, is he, in a tizzy, something's cooking, is he busy, coming, going, yes and no, kitchen sink is overflowing, going down the closet doors, in the local dinosaurs, getting wet, in a jet, dancing to the castanets, look around, for a spot, there he goes, private eye, it's so confusing, but so amusing, what is he?
You know what? We need to start now. We just need to start.
I will say right now, the Yetis, I own a Yeti and I have a couple of Shure microphones, and the Yeti in comparison to the good stuff is pretty much kind of garbo.
I understand.
you know.
But when you get it free from a friend, by the way, my name is Sam. Ray, we're getting right into it. We're jabbing and jousting over microphones.
No, I mean, here's the deal. I'm just saying, I was doing a podcast. I won't say which one that I didn't care as much about as I do other shows. I go on, right?
Oh, poor
damn, catching strays. Other podcasts catching strays.
Yeah, and so I had to do a mobile setup and take it inside the house. And I just said, F it, I'm just going to use my Yeti because I don't want to deal with this elaborate setup for everything else with the mixing board and all the other stuff. So I do the show on the Yeti. And to be fair, this is partially their fault, too. My gain and my was so high, you could barely understand what I said for the entire episode. I was so over-mic'd, and the mic was not doing any favors, but nobody said anything to me. So I go to listen to the episode, and I love hearing my own voice. I only got like 10 minutes in, and I was like, I gotta bail. This sounds awful. I can't listen to this. Why did no one tell me I will never use the Yeti again? So now I'm, you know, proselytizing. That's the word.
Proselytizing. Sure has some like sub $200 mics now, and like I have never had a bad experience with a Shure, so no. I'm just like, just get you one of those, man.
I'm a fan. But anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this extra segment after the closing credits.
Oh, we're gonna leave that shit in. All right,
I'm gonna start the show now proper and make Chan edit this around.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.